Hello, listeners. Welcome to This Anthropological Life. This is Adam Gamwell.
And this is Ryan Collins.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We are super excited to be here on our first episode of 2017, a brand new year, full of lots of interesting changes around the world, as we know. So we're excited to be here with you, you know, right at the start of January to hopefully be with you every week to bring, you know, relevant topics, new ideas, crazy stories.
Exactly. And since 2017 is looking pretty crazy from the get-go, I mean, the forecast is interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
So we want to be able to showcase new and diverse stories as they're happening. And one way that we can do this is through a new tab on our webpage. Adam, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, so this tab is called What's Your Story? You know, simply titled. And the idea is we want to bring you as part of the conversation. You know, we've retooled the TAL episodes. These general episodes we call TAL Conversations, and the idea is, of course, to have more dialogue, more conversation with the public, as this is our endeavor to do sort of a, you know, public anthropology. So we want to hear from you. We want to know, you know, what stories are on your mind, what things frustrate you, what gives you hope, what sort of wakes you up in the morning. And so we're really happy. We want to hear about anything. If you want to talk to us about monster trucks or your favorite smoothie in a blender, that's awesome. Or if you want to dive into some other issues, we're going to talk about continuing struggles in Ferguson, Missouri, or Standing Rock, we're happy to do it.
Exactly. And other issues, it may not be getting the same type of press as well, because this is a crazy time, as we're all aware of right now, with a lot of different ideas swirling around and showcasing how diverse our predicament is, especially in the United States right now. Mm-hmm. So please feel free to share your story with us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're waiting for it, and we're happy to hear from you. And this is, you know, 2017 is about you. You know, we're here for you and to build this, you know, this public anthropology and this thinking together.
Exactly. And in line with keeping up the conversation with you listeners, please, if you can, if you would like to give us an endorsement, go to iTunes, give us a rating. The more stars you give us, well, you don't have to give us many stars if you don't like us, but if you do like us, please give us 5 stars and just spread the word, because the more times that you give us ratings, the easier it is for everyone else to find us and to join the conversation as well. And the same goes for Facebook and Instagram, as well as Twitter.
Yeah.
And also, in line with carrying on the conversation, we need to talk about our collaborators.
Yeah.
This Anthropological Life is an official collaborator with the American Anthropological Association, and we're very happy to keep that conversation going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we began this, we just really towards the end of last year, so we're still in our first, you know, 6 months with them, but it's been awesome so far. You know, we're sharing resources together, and they're helping us sort of spread the good word of public anthropology, and we're helping spread the good word of the work that the American Anthropological Association is doing, in terms of sort of helping critical thinking be part of everybody's daily dialogues.
Exactly.
So even the piece with that, just to be aware of coming up, we're excited that February 16th is actually World Anthropology Day. So we're getting ready to celebrate that. We're very excited about it. You know, we last year just put out kind of our favorite episodes, but I think we'll be doing something a little more special this year.
Absolutely.
And want to let people know about that. And then we do have a second collaborator that we are brand new with that we're super excited, and is the Society for Applied Anthropology. Right. And so much of our work, you know, you can say it would fall in the applied camp, that we're really trying to bring anthropological thinking out of our brains and out of books into everyday conversations and everyday forms of action and how we can be in the world. And so with that, we are super excited to be working with them to sort of promote this specifically applied perspective. And how do we put our
Absolutely.
Work into action?
Yeah. And we also have a couple other collaborations and new projects on the horizon, but we're going to keep those on the down low for right now.
Mm.
But with that introduction, let's dive into the world of emojis.
Yeah. So yeah, we're going to kick off this year's series of episodes with one of our favorite little characters on our phone. That's the emoji, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to us, it's, you know, kind of came out of nowhere as this little way of talking with pictures, but it's really taken the world by storm. And there's a really deep and interesting story about how emojis are developing around the world.
Exactly. And we can think about what it means for us, what it means for language, and how to maybe think critically about them the next time you're texting.
Yeah, there you go. So cool. And with that, sit back, relax, and enjoy emojis and pictorial writing.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
You know, so I thought it'd be fun today to talk about emojis because, you know, they're on our phones and I use them all the time. I remember when I actually first got them on my keyboard, a friend of mine was texting me like 3 years ago or something. And she kept, you know, using like a horse or a cowboy. And I was like, how do you get these little pictures on your phone? I didn't realize. I thought they were like, you know, you can get a GIF, you can get like a moving picture on your phone, but I didn't realize it was actually like a keyboard.
Exactly. I remember my friend sending me a message with a little race car in it because they were talking about how fast I would normally go about typing back to them and sort of responses. And I was like, what is this symbol on my phone? What does that mean? You know, at the time, I just thought, you're texting me a picture of a race car.
Yeah, did you copy and paste it? Yeah, what is this, you know?
But now, today, we use them so casually that emojis, in some sense, are actually becoming part and parcel to language. Mm-hmm. We all understand what's actually being conveyed, at least within our own linguistic systems now.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when with the rise of texting, I mean, really, like with AOL Instant Messenger, it was like kind of the big rise of sending messages back and forth, and that was, you know, in like the mid-1990s, you know, mid to late 1990s until AOL disappeared. But
for any of you who actually remember what AOL is, and if you don't, that's okay.
It's okay. That just means we're older than you. But it was called America Online. It was one of the first, like, you know, online web browsers and things. Actually, I remember when we first got AOL that you had to install it with a CD because you couldn't download. Now you can download Firefox, right? You know, because you already have access to the internet by built-in browser. But anyway, so we're dating ourselves a little bit. But so even the rise of that, like, you know, you would be typing. And I remember, you know, a friend in high school would always type cool, K-E-W-L. And I always think that's weird. Why do you spell it like that? You know, I always noted that was a strange way of spelling cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but we see those sort of filters in now that we text a lot more than we probably message. Or traditionally sitting on a computer messaging, you know, but like Google Hangouts, you can chat with people and right. Even Apple's message program now, like it functions like a chat room, you know, like the chat rooms used to. But with them, you know, you do see, we've seen this rise of different ways of using English, you know, and where someone will type the letter U for Y-O-U, you know, or are you home? Just the letter R mm-hmm. and the letter U, which I always thought was kind of funny. But, you know, a lot of people have adopted that. And that's, you know, just again, personal preference of how you want to spell a word out or not, you know.
You know, what's fun about this, though, is we can really just get into the cool aspects of emojis. We can use them in colloquial settings. We can use them even in some formal settings if it's, you know, if it's something that's structured in that way that it can be acceptable. Mm-hmm. But one of the concerns that came out about emojis when people started to use them in a very mainstream context was, is this going to be the end of language as we know it?
Right.
Are we all going to be able to spell correctly now that we have autocorrect giving us, you know, our prompts and we're using symbols instead of actual language? Is this going to cause us problems?
Yeah, I mean, I remember even seeing, like, when we were younger too, even when I started taking typing classes, mm-hmm. you know, which for me was in the seventh grade. And I remember, you know, people were saying then, like, oh, if you're typing on a computer, is that going to ruin your handwriting? Yeah, it actually kind of did. But then, like, this is a much, you know, now we're much later and we have emojis as a really common way of conveying ideas, usually, you know, in texting and stuff. And yeah, it is this question of, like, you know, are we seeing this, the death of written language? You know, so Seema Moody wrote a piece for CNBC actually in 2015, in June. So a little under 2 years ago, but it still resonates. And like, we see these questions. We just did searches across online on the web and stuff. And we did see different kind of stories like this popping up saying, oh, are we seeing the death of language? And like certain linguists are quite upset that we're, you know, using pictoriographic or iconographic language again. We'll talk about what those are. But, mm-hmm. And so what Seema Moody kind of points out is that, you know, these were first used as an addition to written text, right? We're seeing larger and larger groups of people now just using emojis to talk. And I've seen, it's true, if you watch, I mean, emojis come from Japan, and it's, you know, the mix of the two kanji, which is the Japanese written script language that just mm-hmm. means picture character. So it literally is, you know, it's a picture of a character, you know. And it's interesting to think about, you know, so is this, do these somehow pose a threat to writing? I don't think so, but I mean, you know, again, we're not linguists technically, but it does raise an interesting question of, you know, what kinds of things are worth defending when it comes to language? What kinds of barriers are supposed to be, you know, do people want to put up and say we need to defend this form of thinking or speech or a certain accent? Mm-hmm. And emojis are interesting because they're not letters, right? They're pictures.
Right. And again, let's take that charge. I'm going to back it up here that, no, emojis are not going to be the end of language. Mm. And I think the one way that we can kind of showcase that is to break down what language and writing is. If we can talk about script. So if we look at our current alphabet in English today, right, we have 26 characters and we just put these symbols together. Now, if we think about a larger sort of collection of scripts and symbols that could be part of an extended alphabet, if you will, that's going to be used more by linguists, we could think about symbols like the dollar sign. We could think about exclamation points, question marks, is all being part of that, or ampersands, the at symbol with that we all use with email constantly. These are all parts of an extended means of communication that we just simply don't use in the same way anymore.
Yeah, that's a great point, though. Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't even think about it. You're right. The ampersand, like the little at symbol, and the hashtag too, right?
Exactly.
These are very common parts of online vocabulary or parlance, right? That you don't hear as much about saying, oh, is the at symbol going to destroy you know, us typing the word at, you know, mm-hmm. it hasn't so far. And that too, in this sense, is this kind of pictorial graphic writing, right? So exactly. I want to differentiate these two because they're interesting. You know, we're looking through this, but so there's different kinds of writing that, of course, exist, right? So when we say emojis, you know, that we were actually talking about doing the episode, like it harkens to the idea of like Egyptian or Maya hieroglyphics, right? It's sort mm-hmm. of pictorial writing.
Exactly. And more specifically, it's actually like Aztec writing because they used pictures, logographic types of script. Well, actually, I should say more pictorial script because they would use a mountain in reference to a location of a mountain, but you couldn't actually read the name of the place into a specific mountain unless you knew that it was directly representing that one particular space.
Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, what you're saying, and it's a good thing to think through, is like, yeah, there is this sort of pictographic writing, right? And this is where like a direct representation of an object is that's what an image is. So a smiley face, an emoji, is pictographic in that regard, right? It's a smiley face, which means it's representing a smiling person.
Exactly.
However, it is also ideographic. And this is where the challenge comes in. Ideographic, it's got the word idea in it, right? So it's graphic, meaning writing or spelling out, an ideo, so it's spelling out of an idea. So ideographic writing represents abstract concepts like happiness. So in this case, an emoji can be both, right? And the smiling emoji can be both a pictographic, because it represents, even though it's yellow, or now they're sort of making them a little more realistic by having human skin tones.
Not just like Lego characters anymore.
Right. Yeah. Right. We're moving weirdly much more into real life, you know, which is with the crazy advances of CGI and stuff. And like they did in Star Wars Rogue One, and they've done in other films too, of bringing CG characters in, you know, it's weird that we're also seeing emojis on this other weird spectrum of visuality, also moving towards slightly more realistic looking things. You know, we're all heading towards the uncanny valley of, we're not sure if it's real or fake anymore.
Exactly.
But all that to say, yeah, so we do see different kinds of writing. There's ideographic and pictographic. So in this case, emojis can be both, right? And you're saying also with like Aztec and Nahuatl was the name of the language, right?
Exactly.
Like they had hieroglyphics that represented a certain thing. So this is a pictograph of this mountain, right?
Which is, again, to have a brief aside to differentiate from something, another form of a very famous hieroglyphic system, and that would be Maya, for example. And in the Mayan system, you had not only symbols, but you would have different smaller parts of language that would be making specific types of sounds. So you have logographs and syllables that could be put together to create language. You would also have sometimes even full figures that would represent an entire glyph, and that would potentially even be a name of a particular person or a deity. So you could have both.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. And one of the things too about Maya that's interesting is like, again, one of the differences between like pictographic and ideographic writing and logographic is what you're talking about, right? Is that logographic is also pictorial writing, but there's a pronunciation that goes with it, right?
Exactly.
And so there's certain ways you'll say the image or the image that you see, right?
So for example, let's do this through audio. Linda Shaley was really famous for making one particular way of doing this, different way of combining glyphs, famous, and that was by using the example of a jaguar. But in ancient Mayan tongue, we would say balam, right?
Balam.
So there would be a picture of a jaguar's face representing balam, and you would know that sounds balam, jaguar, right? But you could construct that in different ways by using three different pieces, or by having the jaguar face as the main prefix, but then having the pieces come afterwards. So it would use it to start. So you would have the ba, la, and ma glyphs, but you would always drop the end vowel. So it would read ba-lam.
Ba-lam.
So you could do it in multiple different ways to create the same effect. And for a time period, at least for about 300 years or so, this probably was pretty accessible to the general public.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems pretty ingenious, right? Because it is this mix of, there's an image that is the jaguar, then you can actually take the other individually pronounceable, you know, pictograms and put them together to make ba-lam. That's really ingenious because it shows, in this case, more than one way of producing the same idea, right?
Exactly.
That's, you know, and it's interesting because one of the other debates that has come out of emojis too, and you're saying like one of them is a little overly dramatic idea that, oh, we're going to destroy language, is that, oh, our emojis, they're pictorial writing. That means they must be some sort of evolution of Egyptian hieroglyphics or Maya hieroglyphics. And we want to sort of take that apart too, just to think about, because we're not taking an evolutionary bent on these kinds of forms of writing, you know.
Exactly.
We didn't like move from Maya into emoji, but also recognizing that there is something connecting them, though, right? Like
exactly.
There's something that we recognize about why we use pictorial writing,
and we can have creative fluidity with pictorial writing. So again, if we think about the way in ancient Mayan script, it would have been written with different types of symbols to put it together to create a jaguar, or maybe just one symbol, we can write in English, and we could say, be happy. But if I texted Adam right now a picture of a bee and a smiley face, he would understand that I'm telling him to be happy.
That's true, I would. Yeah, and that's the, there is that sort of creative freedom in it. And that's it's almost on one level sort of saying, are we destroying written language? And it's in, no, because emojis are still writing. Yes, there's a picture versus you're writing alphabet out. But that's one of the differences here we're talking about. Is it destroying the use of an alphabet? You know, and that maybe that's, you know, that claim hasn't really been raised too much. But that's sort of, again, like English is an alphabetic language in this regard. Yes. We have 26 syllables. And what you know, what makes an alphabetic language different from a pictographic or ideographic one is that individual letters represent consonants and vowels.
Right? Exactly.
So you can make any word up that you can say in this language using these alphabets. And there's a ton of other languages that use this kind of thinking, you know. You know, when you see it in any Romance language, Latin and Spanish and et cetera. So there is something interesting in terms of how we use it. So, I mean, would emojis like affect the way that we use alphabets? I mean, maybe, but again, is that a bad thing? Who's to say really, right? I mean, I don't know if we can, I mean, I'm not prepared to put a value judgment on it, you know. I love using emojis. So, you know, and it's a fun way of sort of, it on one level literally puts some color into writing.
You know? It does. But, you know, something that might be a better parallel to think about emojis and language with is not that, you know, this is going to be the end or a deviation or some sort of decadent form of writing, but we could think of it maybe in terms of formal and informal speech. And English has lost a lot of its formal and informal aspects, but Spanish has not. And Italian hasn't lost much of them as well. I mean, they're kind of diluted a little bit today, not to what they were, say, 500, 600 years ago, but we know that that's still a component of those languages. In informal writing, informal texting, we use emojis all the time, constantly. Mm-hmm. But you may not see, say, an academic paper carrying, opening up with a number of emojis, leading you on a string of different types of smiley faces, and maybe a canoe and a beer and a glass of wine, or something like that, a lightning bolt following. You know, that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Likely not, but you know, it's still maybe one day. Actually, I mean, there is a translation. We'll put the link on the show notes of Moby Dick entirely in emojis. I've read part of it. It's interesting. I don't know if I can go through the entire book, but interesting idea. You know, but one thing I think to kind of help fill this picture in a little more too is to ask us where emojis came from. Right, yes. And as we said, like obviously, so I said it before. It comes from, you know, the Japanese kanji, the two characters of picture, character. But what's interesting to think about is why were these invented? And so really what it is, in the late 90s, actually, emojis sort of became codified. So it's not even, they're not super old in terms of how long they've been around for. But so like in 1998, 1999, during the dot-com boom in Japan, what they found is that as people were doing more texting and phones had to carry a certain amount of data, right? And I mean, nowadays, this is an important piece of like sort of cellular data to think about, or cellular history, because we now work with gigabit data plans in the US.
Yes.
And people think, it doesn't even occur to you that like a letter, when you type A to send it, is a few bits of information, right? When you're 20 years ago, that bandwidth was much smaller of how much information could be processed. And so what was happening in, so Japan uses logographic kanji and other different forms of language too. And so what these are symbols, as you've probably seen Japanese before, right? They're not specific letters for sounds, but they are ideas that you can put together. And so with that, people would end up taking pictures if they go to the phones, or trying to draw out things to send to each other in their text messaging program. And so the difference, what happened was that telecom companies in Japan were trying to deal with this like huge uptick of data that was trying to be shipped through. Because normally when you type, you know, either a kanji symbol, or we type, you know, hello, my name is Adam in text, it's a certain amount of data. That's easy, because one character is one set of bit data. What happened was that they were doing pictures, and that was sending way more data, and the bandwidth couldn't handle it. And so this company that was coming out, they're called Docomo, and they're this new iMode internet platform. They're inventing this new platform. They tasked this one guy, his name is Shigetaka Kurita. He was part of the team working in this mobile company. They tasked him with inventing inventing emojis, a pictorial language, so they could then ship these phones with a type of vocabulary, a type of keyboard or font, if you will, that would be represented in pictures, because that's what people were doing anyway. So really, it's interesting. This is, in this case, like telecom was following sort of normal Japanese you know, data practices or how people, young people were using phones. What's cool, like a little uptick for anthropology is that basically they gave him a month. They said, all right, man, you have a month to make a, you know, character system that people can use. So he spent 10 days of those just hanging out in the cities, seeing how people used signs. And so they ended up actually using like the Zap Dings font. That's like, you know, one of the last things on the windows. It's just a bunch of random symbols. That's where emojis actually came from. They started drawing from those. And then he would end up drawing little color versions of some of those, seeing that they already existed, because that's people were using Zapdink font to send things, and that was just like blowing up their data plan because it's sending a whole picture of a wheel versus So what was the ingenious thing is what he did was he took the same amount of data that it takes to type in A or B in English and slapped an emoji on that, and that's what then made it also counts as the same amount as a single letter character. So literally, this is an interesting idea, you can literally send a whole idea of a smiley face or a beer can or, you know, somebody running away. But it's the character weight data version is the same as the typing in A or B, which is interesting. This has to do with a bunch of stuff called Unicode that we can talk about if you want to also, but and how it became standardized. But this is really interesting. So just kind of came out 20 years ago as this, like, we need to get rid of the data problem, the bandwidth problem. So they just, this dude invented these pictures. You know, it's really kind of cool, you know, singular origin story.
We're learning together on TAL today.
Yeah, exactly.
So you may have seen a few shirts online circulating recently showcasing that you can have almost universal ways of communicating through emojis, where people are wearing travel shirts that have a number of different symbols written across the chest, and you can point to different things if you're in a place where you don't speak the language in order to get by. I've actually seen videos of people doing this, and we'll post up some links afterwards. And it seems to be pretty effective. So we know that emojis have now become something so accessible on a global scale that I can talk with my friends who are Spanish speakers, and of course I'm able to speak Spanish myself, but we can communicate through emojis with understanding each other just fine. But it's a curious thing to note that emojis weren't always as universally understood or acceptable or as used as they are today. Yeah. So when Steve Jobs was first in Japan to sell the iPhone, most companies actually rejected him because the iPhone didn't have emojis.
Yeah, which is so interesting, isn't it?
That's crazy to me.
Right.
Like, because of how commonplace it is today that it comes standard.
Right.
In fact, with the newest version of the iPhone and the newest iOS, we've had a number of new emojis come in and a number of new emoji options, which makes it even more commonplace.
Yeah, I mean I think it's one of the most interesting pieces of emoji history too, right? Is that, you know, iPhone comes out in 2006, I believe it was, right?
2007.
2007. And so he was, Steve Jobs was probably in Japan 2005, 2006 saying, "Hey, we have this new product from Apple, we really want you to sell it." And like he visited five major telecom companies and four of them said, "No, we don't want that. I mean, where are the emojis?" And he's like, "It didn't even occur to him. You know, didn't occur to them to use that kind of thing." And so then when he decided it was okay, then the fifth largest company then said, okay, we'll take you on board. But if you do emojis, right?
That even speaks to language and culture and how emojis are working. So with that decision by one media mogul salesperson from the US, you actually open up cultural boundaries.
Yeah.
To facilitate communication in new ways.
Absolutely, yeah. And in like what's really cool about that too, to think about, you know, cultural transfer and how language moves across borders. Like so all typed text, including, you know, English as well as emojis, right, are standardized by this Unicode system. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like some sort of ominous like background, like, you know, Mordor eye is always watching, but there's basically like Xerox, you know, the company that we know as is making copy machines and printers and printer paper. You know, they're actually one of the big telecom companies in the U.S. that advanced internet practices and like sort of transferring data amongst groups and stuff. And so anyway, so Unicode is one of the ideas that they came up with because they're trying to find out how to communicate with different people in the office and different people across the world. But they couldn't when they're trying to send data because, you know, it's a bunch of ones and zeros, but it wouldn't know how to be translated if your computer's also in Spanish and you're just sending, you know, English text. And so these guys came up with this idea in 1980, which is, you know, again, a fair while ago. Really, I mean, they came up with, like, Unicode itself came out in 1987, but they were tasked with the idea of how do we make languages communicate with computers with each other across different languages. And so they invented the Unicode system, which instead of having an A and a B or an N-Y, like an N with a tilde in Spanish, they gave them each a Unicode, a code behind the letter itself. So it'd be like U1 plus 2, 5, 6, 7, 8. And that would be T. that would come out as T, right? And so when they sent the information from my computer to your Spanish computer, from my English to your Spanish computer, all it would get was that UT plus 12576, and then your computer would say, ah, that means it's a T. And so they built this sort of language behind the language, right?
Exactly.
And so they had to, it's interesting to think about what you're saying with this idea of transferring ideas culturally as well as linguistically. Like, they had to build this architecture of this other language that we never see,
right?
The computer sees, to let it talk. And this is also, I'm imagining on certain levels how Google Translate works too.
Absolutely.
You know, because it's taking in this Unicode, you know? And so part of that too was interesting in the standardization version of that. Like, they worked on this. I mean, they set this up, and the first consortium came out in 1991 for this Unicode, saying, this is the step we're going to use to like do all letters. And it began with spoken languages, and they realized, oh crap, we could use this for Egyptian hieroglyphics. We could use this for Maya script. We can use this for Esperanto. We can use this for non, you know, Western symbols, and
right.
Realize there's the potential of using this for anything, any written form of human language. There's a ton.
Exactly. I mean, you could think about today how far all of this has come, that we can actually ask for help without knowing the language, but using emojis to do so. We can actually place orders. We can showcase our wants or desires. This is one of the most intriguing universal aspects about this, and it kind of speaks to the way in which, say, even things like hieroglyphics were used in the past, because although they're symbolic representations, you could have people who are speaking potentially different languages coming together by virtue of some sort of joint understanding over what the symbols were. And you have to think that any type of unified group of people in the past, empires, nations, they've had to get by on that type of fundamental basis for communication.
And that's, I think, one of the interesting advantages of pictorial writing too, you know. And why emojis are a particularly interesting example, because they do have cultural context, right? I mean, you know, again, emoji usage came out in Japan. And so a lot of the symbols that we see now, for example, the one where it's like two hands that are put together, it's just the two palms pressed together, you know, that traditionally is sort of a Japanese symbol of salutation, saying hello, you know, or goodbye. And it's interesting, like, we can read it here in the U.S. as you know, I've heard people say it's like a high five, or it's also doing a prayer or bowing to somebody, you know, offering reverence. They're not different or sort of wrong definitions of this symbol, but...
No, but it's a different way of interpreting it. Yeah. So you can have distinctions in this sort of system as well, where if Adam might just be telling me hello, but I might think that he's praying for something. I might think that he's hopeful. I might think that he's scared or nervous.
Yeah.
We could all run into different interpretations.
True. You know, and that's why it's interesting, because emoji, like that, is, and on one level, is its own form of language, because it is expanding, right? You know, when they originally made 180 emojis, there is now 1850 or a little more, like maybe there's between 1850 and 1900 emojis, which is interesting. You know, and one of the reasons there's so many more now is because that Apple and other groups introduced skin color into the people, right? They're saying they're not just Lego people now, is one of the interesting pieces. But so that, like, there's, you know, so if one, there'll be one character that has eight skin colors, you know, which is awesome,
exactly.
Because it makes it a little more realistic, more representative.
It shows also variation, again, in the human condition, and doesn't just assume that everyone is a Lego brick themselves.
Yeah.
No offense to Lego bricks, because I do love Legos myself.
Yeah, they're pretty nice, you know. But it's cool to think, too, because emojis are going to expand every year, too, in terms of how many they have. Like, so emoji 4.0 just came out in November 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember reading this at Apple, said, okay, new emojis coming out. And you know, of course, BuzzFeed and all the random websites are like, here's the new emojis. And there's a burrito and a cowboy hat now and some cool extra stuff, you know. But that's fairly Western influenced, if you think about it, right? You know, I don't know, unless it's a sushi burrito, which I doubt. You know, but so it's like you can see now we're seeing a really interesting mixing of, you know, this is obviously a really bad dichotomy, but East versus West, right? Or different parts of the world mixing together to make emoji into this sort of pool of common characters that we can use to communicate, even if they may mean certain things. You know, that the hands together mean something in Japan versus the U.S. Around that, we're seeing the burrito and we're seeing the cowboy emoji person and more gendered versions of careers. There's now a Mrs. Santa Claus as well as Mr. Claus.
Exactly. So one of the things that I think is good for us to put as a caveat to this, because we're really for emojis here right now, but we also have to kind of caution that the way in which symbols and pictures and languages produce can inherently create structural violence.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is just basically putting up roadblocks that are built into the system that further empower one group and further disenfranchise another.
Mm-hmm.
So if we think about emojis and what they represent, they're often essentializing ideas to a certain type of form. So the cowboy hat, in the cowboy hat and the burrito, right? We could say Western, or we might even say American, right?
Yeah.
So, very
much so.
Exactly. And before, say, the different skin tones have been integrated with the new types of emojis that we're seeing today, everything may have come across as being that of a white individual.
Right.
Or a yellow Lego brick individual. Mm-hmm. But it clearly wasn't representing everybody. And it creates a different type of structural dichotomy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to see those barriers start to break down. But anytime you have language and anytime you have a symbolic system, essentializing becomes an issue.
Mm. Yeah, that's a crucial point that we may just leave on because it's good to think about, right? Like, what are emojis doing for us now? Because on one level, they're here to stay. They're not going to go anywhere and they're going to keep expanding and people's uses of them will continue. Is it going to damage written word? Probably not. But I think you're really right to point out that we do need to be aware of issues of representation, issues of what we call structural violence, where it's like the frameworks that put these words or pictures out there, you know, have a certain thought. Agenda is too strong of a word, but in terms of saying we're trying to give a number of representations through the Unicode system by saying we all will use the code behind the emoji to say this is cowboy emoji, this is cactus, this is chili pepper, but also this is white person, black person, brown person, you know, old person, young person. So understanding who's being represented and how, right? Mm-hmm. And interesting that in this case, you know, so this is one of the big changes we're saying is that they sort of included skin color, skin tone changes in the emojis now, because which is good because nobody is really yellow, brick colored yellow. No people. I mean, right. If you have severe jaundice, maybe, but that's not a representative sample of humanity.
Exactly. And we don't need to be sending out sick emojis to make people feel bad all the time.
Right.
Sick smiley face. I mean, that's a little hopeful, but yeah.
Exactly.
A little sour.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think you're totally right. So, I mean, that's a good point just to think with and just say that we have to be aware of what are emojis doing. Maybe, you know, we'll check in with emojis, you know, in a couple months or a year or something.
Exactly. So perhaps the takeaway with emojis are these are great symbols for us to get by cross-culturally. However, if you take that anthropological lens to emojis, think about them actively and think about what limitations, what sort of biases might be ingrained into the systems you're using, whether you intend to use it that way or not.
Yeah, well said, man. Cool. Thanks so much. This has been a fun conversation. And as always, this is Adam Gamwell.
And this is Ryan Collins.
Thanks for joining. And as always, we are brought to you in collaboration with the American Anthropological Association and our new pals at the Society for Applied Anthropology. So we're super excited to bring you a ton of awesome new content in 2017. Some of it we can tell you about, some of it we can't tell you about yet.
Exactly. There's so much great stuff on the horizon, and we are getting there because of our listeners. For all your help, guys, you're making it happen, and we're going to keep bringing you good content.
Yeah, that's the way. You know, you guys help us make the difference, and that's the thing. So also, again, if you love the show, please take a minute to give us a review on iTunes. We've gotten a few so far. We'd love to get more because it helps other people find the show, and that makes a huge difference. So one of the biggest compliments you can give us is to let other people know about the show. And if you have a couple extra bucks in your pocket or you want to help us out, you know, we have a donate button on our page for PayPal. You know, even a dollar goes a long way because we're just looking to cover website costs at this point. The rest of it, you know, dreams are dreams, but right now we're just trying to pay for the website, so.
Exactly. And if you have a question for us, if you want to contact us, please do so. On our website, we have a contact us portion now. You can write questions to us. You can request different topics. Yeah. We are very open, and we just love to, you know, begin conversations.
Yeah, I mean, as we said, you know, we sort of switched the format of TAL to say we're doing TAL conversations, and that's the idea of this,
exactly.
Right? So it's a new tab on our website called What's Your Story? You have episode ideas, you want to ask us a question about something, you're confused about what we said about logographic writing, let us know. We will start responding to these questions, you know, over email if we can. We'll bring them on air. We'd love to do that and sort of get more listener involvement. And we know you're out there. We hear from you every once in a while. So, you know, we're trying to open as many channels as possible to get the good word from you guys.
Exactly. So with that, happy 2017, and we're looking forward to a great year.
Yeah, happy 2017. We'll see you guys.